Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. This might be one of my all-time favorite episodes that I've ever done because I had the opportunity to speak with a very kind, intelligent, and insightful young man named Joe about something called willful suffering. Now, Joe has lost about 75 pounds over the years, and he's accomplished a tremendous amount of work, but not without his fair share of suffering. And this is a topic I don't think is spoken about very much, and I think you're going to find it interesting and hopefully insightful and helpful along your journey to achieving your goals. I hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Let's get into it. All right, Joe, we are live. What's up, man?
Not a lot, man. I'm pretty excited to be on a call with you, man. I love your podcast, so thanks for having me.
Thank you, man. I'm stoked. I'm really excited about this. And just for everyone listening, Joe and I have never met. We've never spoken before. We briefly texted back and forth, but the thing that got us on this call was just the discussion and very brief mention of willful suffering. And so before I say anything, Joe, like, how about you just tell me a little bit about yourself, like where you come from, what do you do, and then we'll dive into the topic.
Cool. So I live in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, a couple hours south of Chicago, for anybody unfamiliar with the state. And then I currently have a day job where I work for an office supply furniture company. And then I also own a women's boxing gym that I co-own with my sister. She boxed competitively for 6 or 7 years. So she decided a few years back, we've now been open roughly 4 years, to open a gym. And I came on as a partner, primarily running finances and whatnot. So.
That's awesome. I love that. That's super cool. And did you box at all growing up?
I did not. Every once in a while, she'd have me help her, like, hold mitts. But she was primarily boxing at the amateur level when she was an adult and she was living elsewhere. So it wasn't something where I was even around her a ton when she was boxing. Mm-hmm. And I've always paid attention to the sport, but it was never something where I grew up in a boxing gym. So she spent years in boxing gyms, but I basically came on where, again, I had a little bit of knowledge of the sport. But for the most part, just came on the business side.
That's cool, man. I love that. And do you box at all now?
I do a little bit. Yeah. I'm not competing or anything like that, but you know, I have a gym where I've worked out with her a ton and have gone over a bunch of different coaching stuff, and I love doing boxing workouts. So it's awesome to have a place where I can go and do stuff like that.
That's amazing, man. I love that. So let's just dive right into it. I don't even remember exactly what you said in response to my story and bit about willful suffering, but do you want to talk a little bit about it, where what you think about it and maybe why you responded to my story?
Yeah. So you had posted about talking, essentially asking people if they thought that you sharing your opinions or your having discussions that you had on willful suffering was something people would want to hear. And I really wanted to hear your perspective because, one, I love hearing your perspective, not just in fitness, but Harry Potter and other things as well. but the big thing for me is, so I've run 6 half marathons and was leading up to run a marathon that was supposed to go on this weekend before all the COVID situation took place, as well as I do CrossFit. And I just love working out, but I love being able to push myself, both from a nutrition and a physical standpoint, a fitness standpoint. And lately, since that the marathon got canceled and the CrossFit classes have not been going on, my willingness essentially to power through or to suffer through workouts or suffer through long runs and whatnot had definitely deteriorated a little bit prior to you mentioning that. And it's something that just doesn't get talked about for people both inside the fitness industry and outside the fitness industry. I think willful suffering as well as sacrifice, you know, I mentioned I have a business that I co-own, and you obviously have the Inner Circle and your own business, and there's sacrifices that take place there. And I think as somebody who's for years, both inside and outside fitness, has been willing to suffer, willing to make additional sacrifices, and then to get to a point where I'm kind of now, I'm still willing to make sacrifices, but maybe not as many, or I don't want to necessarily put in the training as often. It was something I was just looking forward to hear somebody else's perspective on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I love that. I mean, dude, 6 half marathons is no joke. That's talk about putting, like, willingly suffering through that type of training. That's
that's the quintessence of that, right? Where it's like, I'm sure that as you're running and as you're doing the training, you're going through pain, you're going, like, you would rather not be doing that. Like, there are many things you would rather be doing. There are many times throughout a run in which you're probably like, oh, this sucks, this hurts. Like, you have a lot longer to go. You'd rather stop. It would be more comfortable to stop, but you will yourself through. And I'm not a big runner, but I mean, I'm assuming that's what it's like. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I was never a runner until I finished high school. I was extremely overweight in high school. I was huge, man.
Really?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's when I was in high school, I got really big. And I remember close to the end of my senior year, I was letting my dad cut my hair because I didn't want to go to the barber and pay money. And he always, whenever he cut my hair, he'd tell me to take off my shirt. So I take my shirt off and he's cutting my hair and I'm just looking at myself in the mirror and I'm like, dude, you are huge. Like, and there was a short period where for the first couple minutes of it, where I realized just how big I was genuinely like mad at like friends. Cause you know, you always joke with your friends, like, and they'll get on you about things. I was like, how come no one has ever seriously just sat me down and been like, bro, like, eat something healthier than what you're eating or eat less or do something. And like, I probably wore it a little bit. I probably wore my weight a little bit better than a lot of people just from the standpoint of like, I was working for a parks and rec department where I was constantly outside. I played pickup basketball with friends constantly. But that said, I was still looking in that mirror with the shirt off. I was like, damn, man, you are huge right now. So that's when I decided to start dropping weight. And that summer I dropped close to, I don't know exactly because I didn't weigh in before I started dieting, but I was probably over 275 and I got down to right around like 208, 210 by the end of that summer.
Wow, that's amazing.
But it wasn't until that point of about 208 to 210 where I started running. So this is, you know, freshman year of college at a community college living with my sister. And yeah, like you said, that willful suffering from the running, because at first when I first started running, I couldn't go longer than 10 minutes without basically just feeling like, man, I need to sit down. And I just sit there like on the sidewalk and be like, damn, I wish I had some pizza right now. Or I wish I was at home playing video games. So, yeah.
Man, well, hold on. I got to back up. You went from around 275 to 208 without running.
No, at that point, during that summer, I primarily just did. I did. It's called like the ideal protein diet. The only reason I did it is because I'd had a family member who had done it. And they had lost a bunch of weight. And that was really, at that point, I didn't have any information on nutrition and whatnot. So okay. I was like, I'll do what they did. And I was still living at home for that summer after senior year. So for me, I was like, I told my parents, like, hey, I'd like to do this. And they're like, yeah, you need to do it. So they helped out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't having to pay for the groceries. Like, my mom was willing to cook, or my dad was willing. If I had to work, he'd already have, like, the foods I could have grilled by the time I got back. So that really worked out. But, yeah, it wasn't. That summer was really, I was still just working a lot, you know, working outdoors for the parks department and then playing a lot of pickup basketball and maybe doing a little bit of like lifting at the fitness center we had. But at that point, I hadn't really been running much at all. It wasn't until I moved in with my sister and her husband and their two kids for going to community college where he was a runner. So I was like, well, maybe I should pick up running a bit more.
So what about the nutrition? So you started this ideal protein diet. Was that difficult or was that relatively easy for you to do?
It started off actually pretty easy for me just because I always remembered myself in that mirror looking like, man, you're too big, right? You're blowing up. But again, from somebody who in high school had, I'd go to school in the morning, I would eat Pop-Tarts at lunch, I would be eating the chicken sandwiches that you could buy, fries, and like, as someone who probably had eaten maybe three salads their entire life at that point. Yeah, eating healthier foods like salads or grilled chicken instead of chicken nuggets or General Tso's chicken from the Chinese I love, like, was a lot different. And it did take its toll in terms of just after a while being like, I'm sick of eating, you know, eight different foods.
Yeah, so it wasn't easy, but it was something that was worth it to you based on sort of that image in your head that you kept going back to.
Absolutely.
That's so, because I mean, we could have a whole conversation around willful suffering in regard to the nutrition aspect of that, right? Like, just like making, going from what you were currently doing or what you started doing your whole life, the Pop-Tarts, the General Tso's chicken, which, by the way, General Tso's chicken is the best chicken in the world. It's ridiculous. So you went from that to then having a more healthy diet, having a protein-focused diet, eating more fruits and vegetables. And that in and of itself is a very difficult thing to do, to overcome that aspect of it. So then you started running, and was that, what was difficult about that for you?
I think the biggest part for that was having the cardio stamina of just like, I could not, both from a stamina standpoint, I couldn't run at first for more than 10, 12, 15 minutes. I mean, I would literally, most days, I didn't have a good set of headphones, so I'd just be playing a song in my head over and over. After like three or four times, I'd be like, that's long enough, like, you're done, walk. But the flip side of it was, at the same time, at that time when I first started, this goes back to the, you know, the willful suffering and the sacrifice, was mentally at first, I hated it, because I think for me, when I first started running, when you're first starting something like that, you have to think about that the entire time, in terms of not only like, how do I feel, but man, I feel like my breath feels heavy, I'm dying. You know, you're thinking that one more step, one more step, one more step, one more step. Whereas now, after you build up to that point, you know, I can spend time on a run, running at a pretty hard pace, and be thinking about something completely different, whether it's my business or just zoning out, or just, again, literally mentally zoning out where I'm not thinking about anything, or just being able to kind of check, you know, self-regulate in terms of, okay, like, ankles feel good, knees feel good, hips feels good. Like, how do you feel about your pace? Whereas, again, mentally, when I first started out, it was a drag. It was a fight.
Man, a couple things crossed my mind. The first being, you were just playing the song in your head, and my immediate thought goes to having a CD player that when you would run, it would skip the song. I remember I would cut weight for wrestling, because I wrestled all through high school, and we would run oftentimes to cut weight. And I remember I would hold my CD player out in front of me, like, to hold it as lightly as I could as I was running, to try and prevent it from like having that shock so it would skip. And I remember I got the CD player that had like shock absorber on it, so it wouldn't skip, and it still skipped. Yeah. But man, that, you know what's interesting? I haven't been a runner in a long time, but I did run a lot for wrestling to cut weight. And I also, I my whole life, I've been a jump roper. Like, I love jumping rope. I love skipping rope. I recently put up a video on Instagram about it. And apparently I was saying jump roping, and I got a lot of like kickback. It's not jump roping and skipping or jumping rope, either way. One of the things I've noticed about running and jumping rope, at least for me, is the beginning is always the worst.
Yeah.
Like the first half mile to a mile of a run, and the first 3 to 5 minutes of jumping rope, absolutely awful. Like, the entire time, every step when on a run, the first half mile to a mile is just like, ugh, like, feel heavy, feels like lead, hurts a little bit. Same thing with jumping rope, where the first 3 to 5 minutes, every hop, it's like, oh man, I can sort of feel that in my shins, my knees a little bit, my shoulders are burning already. Like, it's the worst part of it is at the beginning. And I think, you know, it's interesting. You can sort of look at that in regard to life. So many things, the hardest part is the beginning. The hardest part is just getting started. It's just doing it. And I see a lot in the fitness industry, and I think I actually contribute to a little bit. It's hard to sort of find the balance, right? On one hand, I want people to be forgiving of themselves, and I want people to not be too hard on themselves. And I think it's an important thing to understand. On the other hand, I think people need to be a little bit hard on themselves in order to achieve any amount of success. The hard part to balance is how can you be hard on yourself without guilting or shaming yourself? How can you be hard on yourself while continuing to love yourself? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You said two things there. I'm hitting that one first, that you just spoke on. I think that's a really good point, because I'd recently had a conversation with my girlfriend who, she basically said, she's like, you know, I hate this term, but I feel like you need to give yourself some grace sometimes. And I guess before that, I hadn't really thought about that, because there is that combination of, again, you need to be willing to, you know, willing to make sacrifices if you have goals or things you want to accomplish. But I think where I was struggling with that teeter-totter, essentially, of grace versus the sacrifice or willful suffering, is this has been shortly after that first marathon had canceled. And I was basically pouting to her about the fact, I was being extra whiny about the fact that, like, I'm not running as much as I should be. I'm still, like, working out by myself. And I'm pushing myself for the most part, but it's not as hard as I should be. And she's like, well, you're not training for the marathon anymore. So it's not like you're have that specific task that you're willful suffering for. Like, you should give yourself some grace on that. And I think she did make a good point on that. It's just hard because I'm somebody who, like, I'm very much, I'm very good at being hard on myself because, again, like you, I've talked about, like, I don't mind willful suffering for the most part. So I am willing to be hard on myself, but there is that line that I probably step over too often on myself. You'd also brought up that it's the toughest at the beginning, and I cannot agree with that anymore. You know, because I had mentioned, like, training for this first full marathon, there were so many mornings where I'd get up to go for the long morning run, I did not want to go. But it was the aspect of essentially putting on the running clothes, going out, going on the run. And, you know, it's a 12, 14, 16, 18 mile run on a Saturday morning in January. There's snow. And it was always the first 2 miles where I was just like, this is terrible. This is awful.
But, why, you know, am I doing this?
Exactly. There were literally moments where I was just like, you could just turn around and go home and go back to bed, or, like, go get pancakes or waffles. Like, this is terrible. Once you hit that, for me, once I hit that point where I'm physically warmed up, I feel good, my body feels good, it's ready to go, then mentally it kind of turns on at that point where it's like, you're here, you're gonna knock this out, you're gonna do this. So, like you said, I couldn't agree more with the fact that, you know, it is the beginning that always is the toughest.
Man, there's so much that now the conversation is going that like my mind's going in so many different directions, one of which is you bring up the competition part of it. I think this is unbelievably important, is competition. For me personally, I've never trained harder and more consistently than when I was competitively powerlifting. For two reasons. Number one is I had an overarching goal of I wanted to deadlift 4 times my body weight. That was my goal since I was like 18 years old.
Right.
The other thing was I have these competitions in which I'm going to be displaying my strength and my skill in front of other people. And these are specific days on which I've planned to try to be my absolute best. It's not just, let's just see how I am today. It's like 3 months, 4 months, 6 months in advance, I've planned for that specific day to bring my best self. And I think there's a lot to be said for having competition in your life, whether or not you decide to enter a competition, which I think really everyone should do. I think it's very important. I think for anyone who says, like, I shouldn't enter a competition, I'm not good enough. It's like, not good enough for what? Based on who? Based on what ideal are you referring to? You don't have to be a professional lifter in order to enter a competition. No one thinks, like, if they're going to run a 5K, they're like, you could enter in a charity 5K and run as a competition with yourself. No one's like, oh no, I'm not a good enough runner yet to enter in this charity 5K run. It's not how it works. It's like, the only competition is with yourself. And I think bringing more competition in your life is a very good way to start practicing willful suffering in a way that finds meaning. I think that's really the key in order to be able to tolerate suffering, is to have a meaning behind it. And the thing that you said from the very beginning was the thing that allowed you to do it from the beginning was thinking about the picture, thinking the picture of you in your head. It's like, this is worth it. And that's sort of what steamrolled it, got everything going. You have to have a meaning behind why you're suffering. And then from there, and this is the really hard part, is you have to be really willing to push through pain and discomfort and everything pulling you away from it. Everything that's like all that voice in your head, I could just stop now, I could just sleep in, I could not do it. And I think, you know, it's super interesting that you brought up thinking about the picture in your head of yourself, right? Because that picture in your head of yourself ended up helping you take action towards what you wanted to do, even though it was very, very, very difficult. But after every time, either you ate well or you went on a run or whatever it is, I guarantee you felt better for it. You were happier, you were more proud of yourself, and you knew it was taking right action. I think what's really an interesting component of willful suffering is you always learn and get better as a result of it. whenever you're putting yourself through something that's very difficult, that's very challenging, that often you don't want to do, you are always more proud of yourself at the end of it. You're always better as a result of it. And every single time you don't put yourself through something difficult and willfully suffer, you regret it. You always wish that you had done it. You'd always wish that you'd put in the effort. You always wish that you had just done something a little bit extra rather than sleeping in, rather than whatever the crux, your individual crux is. Maybe it's sleeping in. Maybe it's eating more than you should have. Maybe it's whatever it is. You are always more proud of yourself when you do the right thing.
Yeah, I think something that you brought up too about having that visualization, where you brought up the example for me, that I brought up earlier about, you know, I had that mental picture for so long in my head of seeing what I looked like with my shirt off and just being embarrassed and angry. I also think what that motivation or that fire or that mental vision is for someone can also change. Because I know it was a couple years before I actually ran an actual half marathon from when I started running. And in that time period, I kind of came to, I don't know if came to peace with that mental vision, because it was so far in the past and I had dropped the weight and felt like I would looked and felt better. And that kind of changed to where it was less about that. And it was more then about like trying to prove myself, one, as an athlete. Cause I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm nothing special in terms of, I'm not a professional athlete by any means, but I like to just push myself as an athlete. And that's where, mm-hmm. you know, that competition with myself of running the half marathons came in, as well as then, shortly before I ran my first half marathon, my grandma passed. So it was dedicating it to her, you know, putting in the work and doing things to make myself proud of myself and other people was another thing that had become the new vision in my head. So I think for a lot of people, like, that vision is going to change throughout time because motivation and factors change. You know?
I love that. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Would you say you love yourself more now than you did when you were at your heaviest?
I would argue yes. I would definitely argue yes. And I would think a large part of that reasoning, and I'm, you know, I wasn't somebody who was like, oh, I'm fat, I don't love myself or anything like that. But it was something where you brought up being proud of yourself. And mm-hmm. I think all of my favorite moments that I look back on and all of the moments where I was happiest are those moments of like finishing a half marathon, and then not necessarily just being happy in the moment of like, man, I finished the half marathon, but think of like all the work that came prior to that day. Yes. And it's that idea of being, I find myself happiest when I can look back and say like, man, you put in the work, like you should be proud of yourself right now. Cause I don't necessarily think, and I know there are arguably people who push back on this, but if I just stay home, like every once in a while, staying home, being lazy, watching Netflix is fine. But if there's most of the time when I get to a point where I'm consistently getting lazy or I'm not doing the things I know I need to and getting into bad habits, I'm not happy with myself.
Nobody is.
Exactly.
Anyone who says that they are consistently happy when they do nothing, and I don't mean the occasional having a lazy Sunday. I don't mean like sleeping in a couple, like one, that or vacation. That's not what you're talking about. You mean if you're doing that on a regular basis, if that is your norm, you're not proud of yourself. Nobody is proud of that. Man, I love everything that you're saying. I'm super glad that we're having this conversation. And just so you know, I'm beyond impressed with your progress and what you've done. I mean, it's pretty cool that I can literally have never met you before, and we can hop on the phone like this and have an amazing discussion. Like I'm really lucky and grateful that we're doing this. The thing that you just hit on that is to me just so important was it wasn't that you didn't love yourself because of your weight. It's that you now love and appreciate yourself more because of the work and effort that you've put in to achieve certain goals, right, to finish the half marathons, to put in work when you didn't want to do it. It's not that, okay, now I weigh this, so I love myself. It's more, it's like, no, it's the amount of work that you've put in to become a better person has now allowed you to be more proud of yourself and appreciate yourself more. It's not necessarily the weight. It's the process of getting to where you are now that has allowed you to become more proud of yourself. Right. And I think a lot of people, they live in a life year after year after year in which they get more sad, more depressed, more lonely, more insecure, more self-conscious, because they continuously avoid doing something that's going to make them uncomfortable. They continuously avoid doing something harder, whether it's physical, mental, emotional. And it's a catch-22, right? Because whatever you choose is hard. Either, right. either option is hard. Going for their run is hard, or staying in is hard. But in your gut, you always know which one is the right action, which action is going to lead you to be more proud of yourself. And again, it's not necessarily the outcome. It's not necessarily being a lower weight that makes you love or appreciate yourself more. It's the doing the thing that you knew you should do. It's willfully suffering, to come back to that term. It's because either way, you're going to suffer. Either way, life is, in a very weird way, is suffering. Life is suffering, right? It is. No matter what, we will suffer. And some people might hear that and be like, oh, life is beautiful. It is beautiful. And it's, in a very poetic, odd way, it's beautiful suffering, because no matter what you choose, you will suffer. It's about doing, making the actions, taking making the choices and taking the actions that will allow you to be most proud of yourself through this process and journey.
Yeah, I agree. And like, I can really only speak for myself on it. I understand for some people, like, I would never tell somebody who hates running to go out and run 10 miles or 12 miles or hates certain fitness activities, go do that fitness activity. And I, again, this goes even beyond the willful suffering and sacrifice, even goes beyond what we've mainly been talking about fitness, but it goes for life in general, as you just mentioned. But I just think it's one of those things where, again, like, I'm very goal-driven. And if I'm not doing things to go towards those goals, I can, like you said, I can feel it in my stomach, that regret of like, yeah, I don't necessarily want to do this small thing, but this small thing is what will lead to me feeling proud of hitting this goal. And that's, for me, is the big thing, is I just, it comes back to being proud of yourself. And that's when I'm most happy, is when I can look in the mirror and honestly say, like, I am proud of myself right now.
I completely agree, man. And now this brings up a very important aspect of this, which is a lot of the message that I discuss is based around not being too hard on yourself, right? And I, even at the beginning of quarantine, I was like, now might not be the best time for fat loss. And it depends. Right. For some people, it might be. For some people, it might not be. And I think that people might get confused. It's like, okay, well, on one hand, you're telling me to willfully suffer. And on the other hand, you're saying, well, don't be too hard on yourself. They're not mutually exclusive. And I think what's important to remember is it's impossible to make the single best decision every single time you have you have choices in front of you. It's impossible. You will make mistakes. You will. There will be times you slip up. There will be times you don't make the decision that's going to make you proud. There will be times you do things that you regret. We all have regrets in our life. We all make decisions that we wish we wouldn't have. The key here is not to let a single decision or even a single string of poor decisions, number one, cause us to hate ourselves, and number two, cause us to prevent us from getting us back on track. I think that's arguably the most important distinction to make here. It's, listen, if you end up, like, you fall off track for a week or a month or a year or 5 years, you'd say you've been off track for 5 years. You can still get back on. It doesn't mean don't love yourself. It doesn't mean don't appreciate yourself. It doesn't mean hate yourself. It means, cool, recognize the decisions you've made and recognize what decisions you can make now to get better and do your best to make them.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with what you just said anymore.
Man, I'm so beyond appreciative that you took the time to come on here. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or discuss on this topic?
I don't think there's anything on this topic. I do have one Harry Potter related question for you. When you're done with this topic, I mean, I don't want to sidetrack you. If there's anything else you've got to say.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I mean, number one, I if you'd like it, you don't have to accept it. Again, just for everyone listening, this is our first time ever talking. And I think a lot of people are going to appreciate this conversation, man. So I would love to offer you a free month in the Inner Circle. If you'd like it, you don't have to accept it.
I would love that. Thank you so much.
Amazing. So when we get off, I'll text me and I'll tell you how you can get your free month in Inner Circle. This is my way of saying thank you for taking the time to come on and speak with a complete stranger about this. It means a lot to me. And if you ever want to hop on again, man, we can hop on again and have another chat. But sure, whatever your Harry Potter question is, I'm happy to answer.
So you'd mentioned on your last podcast with Susan that your favorite book was the third. I'm just wondering if it's the same with the movies. or if it's, if it changes
no.
up?
No, it's not with the movie. It's definitely not with the movies. That's a great question. Man, with the movies, that's difficult. I would say the later movies, I think, were much better. I would say, honestly, either 5 or 7 are probably is my favorite movie.
I think, yeah, I think those are good picks. For me, I love books 4 and 6 because mm-hmm. of how detailed and intricate they get.
Yeah.
There's just certain aspects that are left out of those two movies that just frustrate me so much. So,
oh, yeah. Man. I wish they could have included everything in the movies. That's what frustrates me the most. And it's funny because my girlfriend, she watched all the movies first. And she kept having questions. And I was like, you got to read the books. You got to read the books. Now, finally, she's finally reading the books. And it's so funny because every chapter, she's like, oh, my God. I can't believe they left this out of the movie. I can't believe they left it. And she's only on the first book. She's literally only in the first one right now. It's like it gets so much better. And that's one of the things about J.K. Rowling, who's just an utter genius, beyond genius. The way she connected those books from book 1 to book 7, it's beyond me. It's absolutely outrageous how she did that. It's the personification of genius. I don't even know how to say it any better than that.
I honestly don't know how she did it with how the storyline just unfolds perfectly from 1 through 7, where she hadn't even, I mean, I'm sure she had the story in her head completely finished of what was going to happen at the end, but the way she was able to write book 1, know what was going to happen in book 7, and then write it how intricately she did was just, I'm a huge Harry Potter nerd, so I could fan out about that all day.
I love that, man. What's your favorite book if you had to pick one?
I would say Goblet of Fire. I like the transition from Prisoner of Azkaban and prior to Prisoner of Azkaban, where it starts to foreshadow in the beginning of Goblet of Fire just how much darker the series is going to get.
Yeah.
And again, there's certain aspects that they left out. Like, I love that there's a chapter in Goblet of Fire where they're meeting with Sirius in the cave and he's telling them about how dark, you know, times were in the first Wizarding War, excuse me. So things like that and how it foreshadowed the second Wizarding War. Like, I loved how, I just felt like Goblet of Fire was a perfect transition from the first 3 books to the rest of the series.
I think it's incredibly well said and articulated, and I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree, man. Dude, thank you so much for this. This has been a blessing, and I really appreciate you coming on. And so text me when we're off the call. I'm going to tell you how you can get your free month in the Inner Circle. And that's it, man. Have a wonderful day, all right?
Hey, you too. Thank you so much, Jordan.
See you, man.
Have a good one.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Joe, thank you so much for coming on. If anyone listening would like to join the Inner Circle, you can do that at www.sfinnercircle.com. We have hundreds and hundreds of home and bodyweight workouts, an extraordinary community of helpful and encouraging people, and we would love to have you in there. Again, that's www.sfinnercircle.com. Have a good day.